Today has been a very interesting day here in Georgia. Our marijuana collaborative, Let's Be Clear, had a meeting down at Georgia State University. One of the topics was, of course, Georgia House Bill No. 1, also known as Haley's Hope Act. This is the Georgia marijuana bill. And part of my assignment for the collaborative meeting today was to review the bill, to talk about the implications of the bill, to review the specifications of the bill, and to talk in general around some of the concerns that might occur related to this bill itself. Our second guest speaker today for the collaborative meeting was Mr. Ben Court. He is a board member of Project SAM, or Smart Approaches to Marijuana, and he works at the Center for Dependency, Addiction, and Recovery at the University of Colorado Hospital in Denver, Colorado. He had a very interesting update for us about what has really been going on in Colorado, both since the advent of their medical marijuana bill that was introduced in about 2001, and then the progression of their marijuana legislation and experiences as they've gone from a very limited medical marijuana bill up through and including legalized marijuana. So today, first, I thought we would go ahead, since I think this is important and a lot of information that people may not be aware of, we'd review the House Bill No. 1, Georgia House Bill, also known as Haley's Hope. One of the comments that Mr. Court made after hearing my presentation was that Georgia has just passed one of the most liberal and expansive medical marijuana bills in the country. He said that the publicity that he has heard nationwide is that we were talking about marijuana oil, that it was going to be a very conservative, focusing on CBD or cannabidiol, which is supposed to be the therapeutic entity, with minimal use of marijuana. But that's not the bill that we have. That's not the bill that has gone into law. And that's not the bill that we're going to be living under. So I thought we would take a few minutes at the start of the program and look a little bit at Haley's Hope Act. So by definition, and that's the definition of the House Bill 1, not my definition of low THC, which is the tetrahydrocannabinol, which is the active ingredient THC that we know of in marijuana that is psychoactive, that causes the high, that makes the person have altered sense of time and space, that gives the appeal that most people feel when they use marijuana. So that's the active ingredient that we talk about that makes you high. The CBD, which is not supposed to be psychoactive, but is allegedly anecdotally supposed to decrease some symptoms of spasticity, pain, other kinds of physical symptoms that are associated with some disease states, that is what allegedly in the beginning we were looking at with the original iterations of the law. So according to House Bill 1, low THC oil is defined as having not much more than 5% by weight, 5% of the THC, the psychoactive ingredient. Now, back in the day, and since I'm a grandmother, I guess I'll say this is your grandmother's THC. Back in the day, in the 70s and in the 80s, THC that was 5% active ingredient was really, really good marijuana. Nowadays, they can't give that away at the marijuana shops out in Colorado and Washington State. This is not a highly sought after, but the idea that 5% THC is not going to give you a buzz, not going to get you high, not potentially addictive, is really incorrect. The original THC that Thomas Jefferson grew, that people think about in terms of the natural product, has about 1.6% THC with about 0.2% CBD, or the non-psychoactive and allegedly therapeutic ingredient. So when people talk about the natural, original marijuana, it was had a very low psychoactive component. Over the years, with enhanced growing techniques, genetic engineering, plant breeding and cross-pollinating and changing the species and the, not the species, but changing the contents of THC, now they have THC that is up around 30%. So this, interestingly, this high-grade medical marijuana that is sold in other states may have up to 30% THC, while the CBD content is still less than 2%. So they have not enhanced the so-called therapeutic component of marijuana, but they have greatly enhanced the psychoactive. This is not a naturally found herb of the earth. This is actually a genetically modified, engineered, some people would say improved upon plant that now has a tremendous amount of psychoactivity. But our compound that we have here in Georgia, allegedly available, will be 5%. It is lawful for any person to have in his or her possession up to 20 ounces of this low-content THC oil if they have been registered with the Department of Public Health here in Georgia. They possess a registration card that is issued by the Department of Health. It is contained in a container labeled by the manufacturer with the percentage of the THC and the manufacturer's name. And if any of these elements are missing, and a person is found with this oil, they may be punished with a misdemeanor. Similar provisions are going to be made for individuals who are part of Georgia Regents University Marijuana Studies Program. So GRU over in Augusta and in Athens is their secondary campus. They are going to be running some clinical trials using low THC oil, and they will have the same ability to provide the oil and have their patients that are part of the studies registered and have these cards by the Department of Health. Included in this bill are some fairly stiff punishments and fines that can be instituted if people are found to have in their possession more than 20 ounces of this oil. So, for example, the law provides for if you have more than 20 ounces but less than 160 ounces, or if you manufacture, distribute, dispense, sell, or possess any of this oil with intent to distribute, you'll be convicted potentially of a felony, which could be punishable by imprisonment for not less than 1 year, but not more than 10 years. And you can be levied a fine of an amount not to exceed $50,000. These are there are incremental increases in both jail time as well as fines that can be levied if you have increasingly larger amounts of oil in your possession. Again, these particular amounts do not apply and specifically are excluded in the law for Georgia Regents University, obviously, since they will be distributing this oil to a number of individuals in their research trials. They are going to be allowed to have control of larger amounts than just 20 ounces. There are also important provisions that are in this particular law regarding the rights of employers to still institute a drug-free workplace. Employers need to make sure that they have written regulations that specify a zero tolerance policy prohibiting either the on-duty or off-duty use of marijuana, and prohibiting an employee from having a detectable amount of marijuana in their body, either in their blood or their urine, while they're at work. Employers, according to this law, do not have to accommodate the use, consumption, possession, transfer, display, transportation, sale, or growing of marijuana in any form. A shortcut way that Mr. Court suggested that employers might want to write their law is to say that they are in compliance with all federal statutes with regards to Schedule I controlled substances, and that they have a zero-tolerance policy for the use of these substances. That may be an easier way, although employers need to be very careful and make sure that they're paying attention to what's happening with a federal law. There are some proposed bills that may look at moving marijuana from a Schedule I, which is no medical use and no ability other than research to have or possess this substance, moving it down to a Schedule II, which is a highly controlled but yet prescribable substance. So provisions for a drug-free workplace are in place in this law. We're going to take a break now. When we come back, we'll talk more about who might qualify for being able to have access to this low THC oil here in the state of Georgia. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. We'll be right back.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key, and the trained staff at AHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, you probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Susan Blank. This is Detailing Addiction, and today we're talking about Georgia House Bill Number 1, the so-called Haley's Hope Act, which authorizes the use of medical marijuana, low THC level, as they define as 5% THC, which we'll talk about a little bit more in a few minutes, oil to be available under certain conditions for certain people here in the state of Georgia. So, who are the people that qualify? Who are the people that are able to access or petition the Department of Public Health for a card to be able to access this oil? First of all, there are a number of illnesses and disease states that will qualify a person for potentially using this oil. The first one is cancer, someone who has end-stage cancer or who has to take treatments that produce significant weight loss and decreased appetite, recalcitrant nausea and vomiting, that it does not seem to respond well to other anti-nausea medications. So folks who have end-stage cancer or wasting or nausea and vomiting may qualify under House Bill Number 1. If you have amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, commonly known as ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease, the only qualifier for this particular disease is either severe or end-stage. Not really any diagnostic criteria, not any real proposed symptoms that are being targeted for relief, just either severe or end-stage ALS. Seizure disorders related to a diagnosis of epilepsy or trauma-related head injuries. I think this is one of the really big loopholes, if you will, in this law. Seizure disorders, obviously people who have had a history of seizures and are being treated for seizures, that is pretty clear. In the field of addiction medicine, we know that it is not uncommon for folks in withdrawal from alcohol or benzodiazepines or barbiturates to have a seizure as part of their withdrawal syndrome. Now, sometimes patients will have these seizures, will be taken to the emergency room. It's not clear to the emergency room doctor, since these folks are actually in a withdrawal state and their drug screens will be negative, it's not clear that it's a withdrawal-related seizure, and so sometimes people will get a diagnosis of a seizure disorder, maybe even put on seizure meds for a year or two. Since they generally won't have another seizure unless they're in a state of withdrawal, they are often taken off their seizure medicines after a period of time and are allowed to continue. But they may have had a diagnosis of a seizure. We also know that there are individuals when using certain drugs like cocaine, methamphetamines, can have a seizure as part of the intoxication intoxication period of using. So sometimes, again, if the doctor treating them is not aware of their substance use, it may be confusing as to the etiology of the seizure, and so they may be given a seizure diagnosis. So that's just one of those little qualifiers that I think are going to create some potential difficulty and some potential for misuse of this marijuana oil. The other part of this that is of concern to me personally is the trauma-related head injuries. Many of my patients have had significant head injuries over the course of their lives, some of them as children. We often know that people with addiction have a tendency to be adrenaline-seeking or impulsive. Therefore, they are potentially more likely to engage in activities or behaviors that might result in a head injury. We know that people who are under the influence of drugs and alcohol often don't have very clear impulse control, and so they may find themselves acting out in ways that in their right mind, in their unintoxicated mind, they would never think of doing. So they're not likely to get in a car and drive while they're more likely to get in a car and drive while intoxicated. They're more likely to get into a fight in a bar or to take a dare, to bungee jump, to do some things that might result in them having a head injury. We also know, again, that because people have seizures, because people have overdoses, because people use to a point of intoxication where they pass out, that they are more likely to fall and hit their head. While they're under the influence of some substances, they are more likely as well to have impairment of coordination. So they run into things, they fall down, they trip. You get the picture. So people with the disease of addiction are very likely and sometimes more likely than the rest of the population to have a head injury. And this is one of those murky areas that I think is potentially of concern. So we also have patients who are diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. Again, the qualifier here is severe or end stage. No direct identification of the symptoms to be treated or the way in which using this oil is supposed to be helpful, and no real definition of what is severe or end stage MS. Crohn's disease is another qualifying illness under House Bill number 1. There are no specifications at all under Crohn's disease as to when, why, what are you treating. Next is mitochondrial disease. Now, mitochondrial disease are diseases of the energy production part of the cells. Each one of our cells can have multiple mitochondria. These are the little energy-producing machines that get the cell running and doing whatever the cell is supposed to do. Mitochondrial diseases can either be genetically inherited, in which they're missing some DNA to properly form or have the mitochondria work properly. These people will experience multiple organ system failure. They may have problems with energy production in general, so they have a lot of fatigue, lots of difficulty in terms of managing their life. And while many of these may be genetically inherited, there are also some individuals who have a spontaneous mutation of the DNA that regulates the function or the formation of mitochondria, and so people may develop mitochondrial diseases later in life. There's no specifications, again, around what are you treating and why might you use this medication, or at what point in a person's disease process might this intervention be helpful. I find it interesting that this disease that often results in extreme fatigue, that they're considering the use of marijuana for it, since marijuana often decreases energy and can create some problems with fatigue in and of itself. The next disease that would qualify is Parkinson's disease. The qualifiers here are severe or end-stage Parkinson's disease. Again, not really what targets symptoms or the definition of severe or end-stage, but a diagnosis of Parkinson's, I would assume, would be required. The final disease category is sickle cell disease. As you know, this is a genetically inherited problem with the red blood cells that create some very intensive pain syndromes and difficulty with organ failure. The qualifier here for sickle cell disease is severe or end stage. Again, no specific around what symptoms, no specificity around what is severe or end stage. So these are the eight different diagnoses that are listed in House Bill number 1 that would qualify an individual for treatment under this law. What else do you need to qualify? You need to be a resident in the state of Georgia for at least 1 year. If you're a child who is born in this state, but yet less than 1 year old, that meets the criteria for one of these diseases, you are also allowed to apply for the card. The card will be issued to individuals who are 18 years of age or older, or the caregivers of children who are less than 18. Important to know, this card does not apply to any Georgia residents living temporarily in another state. This is not a get-out-of-jail-free card to use your oil or to take THC in another state. This is good for Georgia and Georgia only. So these cards are for patients who have the previously mentioned disorders, who are residents of the state for at least a year, and cards for 18 years and older will be directly given to that person. Otherwise, for children under 18, it will be issued to their caregivers. We're going to take a break now. When we come back, we're going to talk about the process of how one might obtain the card, who will be able to provide the information around the card, and some of the restrictions that the state has put in place regarding the use of this oil. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, you probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is Tracy Pearson with Prissy Tomboy. Listen to the Prissy Tomboy radio show every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time as I interview special guests that will inspire adventure and fitness for females.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key, and the trained staff at AHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. This is Detailing Addiction. I'm Dr. Susan Blank, and today we're talking about Georgia House Bill number 1, Haley's Hope Act, or the medical marijuana bill that was passed by the Georgia legislature. We've reviewed a little bit about the law, some of the restrictions and the penalties for people who are not going to be in compliance with either the quantity or with having their registration card. We've talked about the diseases that will qualify an individual for access to the card, and a little bit about residency issues and so forth. So all of this is well and good. The part that is got my attention as I was preparing this particular talk is the deadlines that have been put into place by this law. I'm not aware of any other laws that have been passed so quickly with implementation being required so soon. I think about the various physician organizations that I belong to in the state of Georgia, and so far have not received any notice about this bill in terms of the role that the physician might play and the deadlines that are being put in place for the actual enactment of an allowing of patients to be registered and to receive their card. So I was quite surprised in reviewing the details of this law to find that the Department of Health is going to be required to issue a registration card to individuals and caregivers as soon as possible by, but no later than September 1st, 2015. So this deadline of September 1st, 2015 is fast approaching, and I assume that the Department of Public Health is going to be having an extremely busy summer, no later than September 1st, 2015. Some of the questions that were asked today were regarding people that are going to be diagnosed after September 1st. So certainly a child could be born in November of 2015 who has intractable epilepsy. Yes, anyone who meets the qualifications after September 1st may apply for the card, certainly. But for people who currently would qualify under the specific categories are supposed to be able to get their cards no later than September 1st. So how do they do that? The individual must be certified by the Department of Public Health or by their physician to use the THC oil as a treatment for one of the outlined conditions. Now, as you probably know from previous broadcasts, physicians are not allowed to prescribe marijuana. Marijuana is a Schedule I under the Department of Drug Enforcement, the DEA, and this is a substance that is not allowed to be prescribed by a physician. So the word is a recommendation or a certification. that the physician would indeed certify the patient meets the criteria, but not a prescription the doctor is not prescribing. So the person can go either to the Department of Public Health or their personal physician to get this certification. The composite board of Georgia, the medical board that licenses physicians, physical therapists, respiratory therapists, and some other healthcare professionals, is going to be required to develop a waiver form that must be signed by the individual or the caregiver prior to being issued a card. This particular waiver must contain language that says THC containing products have not been approved by the FDA and the clinical benefits are unknown and may cause harm. So the composite medical board of Georgia will be required to develop this waiver to be signed off by the individual or the caregiver prior to receiving the card. Now, some of the requirements for the doctor to be able to certify this is that the doctor and patient must have a relationship. This cannot be a doc in the box where you walk in and say, hey, doc, I've got Crohn's disease. Will you sign this paper so I can go get a card? No. There needs to be a doctor-patient relationship where this physician is actually taking care of this patient and the physician is actually treating the patient for the qualifying condition. So it can't be your primary care doctor unless the primary care doctor is actually treating you for your cancer or your Parkinson's disease or your Crohn's disease. It needs to be the physician who is treating you for that illness and that you actually have a patient-doctor relationship with. Now, in addition, the physicians must provide a quarterly report to the Department of Health. And these quarterly reports are going to be very important, and I am glad that the state actually put some language around this. Part of the concern for me personally and many of my colleagues has been the fact that when we take this so-called medical marijuana out of the realm of actual medicine, there are going to be few, if any, studies performed in the traditional way that we expect for good medical care. Double-blind, placebo-controlled studies that are published in peer-reviewed journals that look at patients with a certain condition who are given a medication and then a placebo that are monitored both for efficacy, does this medication work, does this medication have significant side effects, are there drug-drug interactions, are there contraindications to taking this medication. This is the kind of research and information needed for doctors to feel comfortable and to understand and appropriately recommend a medical treatment or a treatment plan. So at least our state has put some language in this bill that will provide the gathering of some data around the use of this oil in patients here in Georgia. So every quarter, the physician must provide a report to the Department of Public Health that includes the following information: the condition that qualifies the patient and the condition that's being treated by that physician, the doses that have been recommended or the doses that are being taken by that patient for this condition, the clinical response to the oil. Is the patient being compliant with directions and with the overall treatment plan? Are they having responses to other parts of the treatment as well? Does the doctor notice any particular side effects or problems or complications with the oil? And are they aware of any drug-drug interactions? There is an actual prescription medication called Marinol, which is synthetic THC, the psychoactive ingredient in marijuana. this particular medication was made available by the FDA approval back in about 1985. The medication was indicated for AIDS and HIV wasting and for intractable nausea and vomiting. If you just happen to Google Marinol, M-A-R-I-N-O-L, what you can look at are the number of side effects, including the risk of seizures, that are reported with the use of this pharmaceutical medication. But you can also look at the vast number of drugs and medications that there are drug-drug interactions with marijuana. Marijuana uses a number of metabolic pathways through the liver, as do other medications that someone might be taking for hypertension or elevated cholesterol, heart disease, other kinds of medical problems, and there are a multitude of drug-drug interactions that are listed there. And so understanding how this oil may impact not only the qualifying condition, but also how it may impact other medications or other medical problems that the person has is important information. So this physician report must be put in quarterly, and the reports are protected. They're protected because they contain personal health information. So as with other medical reports or reports that identify a diagnosis and tie that with an individual, these reports are to remain confidential except in a number of cases. The confidential reports can be released upon written request of the individual or the caregiver. So if you sign permission, just like you can in your doctor's office or your dental office, to have your records released or sent to someone, under your written signature, these reports can be released. The reports can also be released to peace officers and prosecuting attorneys for the purpose of verifying that an individual in possession of a registration card is actually registered, and to determine that an individual in possession of this oil is actually registered. So if you happen to be arrested or stopped by a peace officer and found to have the medication in your possession, they would be able to access these reports that are registered with the Department of Health to verify that indeed you do have the right and the proper registration to be able to have this in your possession. So those are the limitations in terms of who can receive this report. Now, this law also developed a marijuana commission that has 17 particular members. This commission has a number of rights and responsibilities with regards to evaluating the process and making recommendations to the legislature and to the governor's office. So we are going to take a break now, but when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this particular marijuana commission and what it's going to be responsible in the future in terms of evaluating the effectiveness and the problems with House Bill number 1. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. We'll be right back.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, you probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on americaswebradio.com.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key. And the trained staff at AHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Susan Blank. We're talking today about Georgia House Bill number 1, which is also known as the Haley's Hope Act and more commonly as the medical marijuana law for Georgia. This was recently passed and signed into effect by our governor, and we've been reviewing the particulars of this law and the impact that it will have on the state of Georgia. Some of the protections that are in there, including criminal penalties for someone who is trying to traffic or sell or distribute in an illegal manner this oil. Safety precautions that are in place for employers. According to Mr. Court from Project SAM, he said that the employer statutes may be challenged under federal law, but certainly any company or business that wants to remain a drug-free workplace and not have to allow accommodation for employees to come to work under the influence needs to look very closely at their language in their policies and procedures and their employee handbooks. So there is some protection there. There are requirements for the physicians who are making recommendations or certifications for the use of this oil in terms of their requirements to provide reports on the status of the patient, responses, and potential problems, side effects, and drug interactions. So these are some of the things that are entailed in this law that at least are helpful, but there are a number of areas of concern that we will talk about in a minute. But right before the break, we were talking about this law also establishes the creation of a marijuana commission that has a total of 17 members. To be appointed to this commissioner is, or to this commission, is the Commissioner of Public Health, the Director of the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, or the GBI, the Director of Georgia Drugs and Narcotics, the Commissioner of Agriculture, the Chair of the Georgia Composite Board of Medical Examiners, the Chairperson of the Governor's Executive Council, two members of the House and two members of the Senate, a board-certified hematologist-oncologist, this is a cancer specialist, a board-certified neurologist, Certainly this would be someone who would be treating head injuries and epilepsy as well as Parkinson's disease and maybe MS. A board-certified gastroenterologist, remember the Crohn's disease that has been added. A board-certified pharmacist, a prosecuting attorney or a member of the state prosecuting attorney's group, a sheriff, a police chief, and a chairperson. Just last week, Representative Alan Peek, who introduced this bill, has just been named as the chairperson of this particular committee. I think noticeably absent are psychiatrists and addiction medicine specialists. Certainly, these are also individuals who may have some interest in what's happening with this particular substance and its effect on the patients that they might be treating, but they are not included in this council or the commission. The duties of the commission are to establish a comprehensive recommendation regarding the potential regulation of medical cannabis in this state. They are to provide a report no later than December 31st of 2015 that includes a review of the conditions, the needs, the issues, and the problems related to medical cannabis, and to recommend any specific action or proposed legislation which the commission deems necessary or appropriate. This information shall be provided to the Executive Council of the Government, the Governor, the Office of Planning and Budget, and the chairpersons of the House Committee on Appropriations, the Senate Judiciary Committee, the Non-Civil Committee, as well as the House Committee on Health and Human Services and the Senate Health and Human Services Committee. So this report is to look at the particulars around how this law is being implemented, what are some of the problems and the needs. There is a budget that will be available to this commission to hire consultants to request studies and surveys, to do research and to gather information. And the commission has to have their report ready by the end of the year. So some other issues that are important in this law include the fact that physicians, clinical researchers, pharmacy personnel, and all medical personnel in a research program authorized by this charter shall be immune from state prosecution. So they are not going to be prosecuted for possession of marijuana, any kind of civil or criminal penalties. Healthcare institutions shall not be subject to any civil liability, licensing, sanction, or other detrimental action. Some of the concerns, of course, have been that federal law still has marijuana as a Schedule I illegal substance. Certainly, research institutions are allowed to petition for access to marijuana for studies, just as they might study cocaine or heroin or LSD or other. Access can be granted, but one of the concerns with having widespread distribution through state universities is the potential restriction on federal funding for research grants and so forth. So the language in this bill is trying to address some of these concerns and to protect researchers, physicians, and other individuals who might be involved in either the certification or the distribution or the research done on these individuals. So the Board of Regents is to be protected in terms of consequences related to their research and their distribution of this oil to their research subjects. So what are some of the areas of concern? I think there are a number of them, including the misrepresentation of the idea that 5% THC is not very high and doesn't cause euphoria. This is categorically not true. Medical studies have considered 3.5% marijuana to be high dose and 5% to be psychoactive, that people do get high, that they are certainly experience a euphoria and a rewarding experience using 5% THC. Again, marijuana potencies from confiscated samples did not exceed 5% until the last 20 years. So many people became physiologically and psychologically dependent on marijuana at doses of 5% or less. And studies have shown, both with marijuana as well as nicotine, that if there's a lower concentration of nicotine in tobacco, when they lower nicotine or tar concentrations in cigarettes, people just smoke more. The same is true in terms of the studies of lowering the amount of THC. People just make up for it by smoking more. The idea that 20 ounces is really not that much is also not true. 20 ounces of 5% THC can produce 50 grams of high-quality hash oil, and this oil would probably sell for more than $3,000, depending on the market that you're in. This is a large amount of THC in 20 ounces, and the concentrating of this oil is something that most young adults are very familiar with how to do and could easily do with this oil. It is certainly of concern the fact that the biggest reason why young people are more likely to use marijuana is not only access to marijuana, but also their perception that the use of marijuana is not dangerous or harmful. As the perceived danger goes down, and we see this clearly studied in the Monitoring the Future studies, the use of marijuana actually goes up. And we're seeing in Colorado tremendous increases in terms of the amount of marijuana used. In fact, in Denver, eighth graders, 22.5% are considered regular users of marijuana. The nationwide average is 6.5. 22.5% of eighth graders are regular users in the past month in Denver of marijuana. The increased accessibility, the high potency of marijuana that comes with the so-called medical marijuana. I know we're not supposed to talk about the slippery slope, but I think Georgia's on a very slippery slope. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on Detailing Addiction.
This is America's Webradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.